Always with me is Gabe Gutierrez. Gabe, how are you doing, sir?
Well, Jason, I am doing fantastic. I can't believe that we have reached the end. The end. Like it's over. Can you believe that?
Well, until the next book.
Well, I'm talking about the holiday season, Jason.
Oh.
What are you the book too.
I see what you did there.
How's he doing, man?
Well, so at the time of this recording, first of all, I'm not in my normal settings. So if I sound different, if there's like a something going on, it's because I'm in a hotel room. Because at the time of this recording, I am at the SLS conference in Phoenix, Arizona. And I just got back from the opening night, the first keynote from Father Mike Schmitz and Emily Wilson. And Father Mike, his whole theme was like, you know, one of the worst things that we can say a lot is when people ask that question, right? When they say, how are you doing? And you just say, oh, I'm fine, or I'm good, when you're really not. Like, it's just kind of a masking thing. He's like, no, like, that's such a cop-out. Like, yes, that's an answer, but if someone's asking you that question, you probably should be honest, especially if it's a friend. So since you're my friend, right now I'm not doing so well. I've got a headache, missing my family. I've been away from my kids for a couple of days. And then like today, my wife sends me a video of our youngest learning to roll over stomach to her back, which I knew was going to happen.
Sure,
when I left, because she was already almost right there, you know, like she was right there right before I left. And I was like, she's going to do it when I'm gone.
Uh-huh.
And then my wife sends me a text and she says, I really want to send you something, but I don't want to make you sad. And I was like, okay, it's either the kids crying because they miss me or Elizabeth just rolled over. And sure enough, so it was the cutest thing. And my middle daughter was right there laying next to her. And she's like, come on, show it the new thing. And then she did it. And so, you know, it was that moment of joy and happiness. But then it was just also that gut wrenching, like, ugh. And
I that you're not there to be part of that.
Yeah, and to rejoice
in that milestone with them.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm hanging in there, you know, but that's how I am doing. But I'm doing much better now that I'm talking with you, and also really excited to wrap up this book with everyone.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Even though I'm a little blue, I am happy to be here. So
good deal.
So yeah, let's jump into it.
So let's dig in.
So we're at the postscript here, and I actually, because pulling the curtain back, people that listen, you won't know this, but I accidentally, I did mention that in the last week that I had read both the last chapter and the postscript, but I had mentioned a few things that were in the postscript because I couldn't remember
which was which.
So I kind of edited that out from last week. But so I really loved this postscript. I think it really fills in some gaps.
I think so too. Like, he definitely took advantage of having a postscript, right? So let's just start with what this is.
Yeah.
This is an extract or a piece, a selection from one of the letters that Dr. Ransom, or the character we know as Dr. Ransom,
right,
that he wrote to the author, right? That they wrote letters back and forth together, and this is a piece of that. And so what we're getting is a kind of peek behind the curtain into the mind of Dr. Ransom, of his time there on the planet, what his thoughts were, some of the questions he has with the author's style and way of putting the story together. It fills in some of the gaps. Yeah, it's really an interesting addition here. I'm really glad that Lewis writes this and includes it. I thought this was pretty creative.
Mm-hmm. And to me, one of my favorite things was seeing the consistency of the character. For example, how throughout this entire book I've talked about how philosophical and you've also, you know, really gone talking about how he kind of gets into the minutiae. He loves the ordinary life. He loves the mm-hmm. ordinary things. And it really comes out, especially in the part where he talks about how do you describe a smell? Like, people are worrying about what it looks like. I care about how do you describe the smell of Melisandre? I'm like, what? But you think about it and you're like, no, but it's true, because certain smells will take us back.
Absolutely. This is why when you're showing a house that you should put, bake cookies in the oven or light a candle that has a cinnamon smell or mm-hmm. something that kind of like takes those who are coming through your house into a memory of childhood or of home or of, you know, something to that effect, because smell is so powerful. Mm-hmm. It triggers our memory, it triggers our taste, it triggers so many different things. It's really such a vibrant sense, and it's something that's completely lost when you're reading a book. So that makes sense. And what sets this up is he's talking about how, you know, I'm a little disappointed with some of the different things that you've done, or how you've cut down different pieces of this, and the ruthless way that you cut out the philological part, right? But he says, and this is where it comes from, that any attempt to tell such a story is bound to disappoint the man who has really been there. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, for example, this, the smells. It's just something that can never really fully be described. But then he goes on to try and describe them, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm.
And then the other part was his favorite time, according to him, was the 6 months of nothing, really. You know, in our minds would be 6 months of nothing with Haras. But that was – he was like, that is the best part.
Yeah, that's the main thing.
And it reminded me of several different whenever you watch like reality TV, or, you know, I watch a lot of YouTube videos, and one of the things I recently watched was this like competition between these two people where, you know, they're spending hours doing this competition. And then they did a little behind the scenes video, and they talked about like, yeah, you see the edited part where it's all action, 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 but there's hours of just nothing that we have to film and that we have to be there. And it's so boring to the viewer or to the reader. Yeah. And so they just, it all just really coincided really well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there was a huge reveal here in that same section, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That we learned the identity of the author, and go that the author is not just some extra character, but rather it's C.S. Lewis himself. Mm-hmm. Like he has inserted himself as a character into this world. He is the author that has got this back and forth going with Ransom, that met with Ransom, that's helped to put all this together. And I thought, like, okay, all right, there you go. Like, this is, very meta here.
Yeah, again, those are those type of things where I would say I have to be careful as a reader, because sometimes, how do I describe this? You know, it's whenever you start falling in love with any type of a book or a movie or a TV show, you start to what's the word I'm looking for? You start possessing it, and then you start claiming it as yours, and then you start, you know, putting your own imagination into it, or saying this is how the story should go because mm-hmm. This is what I love, or this is, I'm enjoying this, so I want it to go the way I want to. And when the author or the director says, no, 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 I'm going to steer it this way, you're like, yeah, but that's not how I want it. And then you start getting friction and you start hating
And then you
yourself.
Start getting a ton of like fans upset at the direction of the latest Star Wars movie or whatever, you know, I don't know.
Just throwing things out there, you know.
But yeah, you're right. And so when things like this happen, it's kind of like, huh, I didn't see that coming. And I also didn't imagine that. So I'm having a challenge processing it. I'll get there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it's just one of those things where you have to kind of disconnect. You have to disconnect from it and just say, look, mm-hmm. this is not my story. Just go with it almost. Just go along for the ride. You've enjoyed it this far. Trust in the process.
I thought it was a cool reveal, though. I thought it was like, oh my gosh, Lewis is in the story. Like, this is insane. I've not seen that. Anyway, so in this section, though, where he's writing to Lewis, saying about the main part was being with the Hrasa and how he just came to know them. And there were some things that he was told, and then there were some things that he doesn't remember being told. He just knows because he was amongst them for so long. Mm-hmm. And I thought one of the most interesting parts of it was towards the end of this section when he's talking about why the inhabitants of Malakandra don't have pets, that they would think it's ridiculous that we have pets. They wouldn't really understand that, you know, mm-hmm. just like we don't understand that they don't. And that's because of the way that they interact with each other, the three different species that they can come together and meet and talk to each other and converse and be together like men. But at the same time, they're different. And so they find their differences funny and attractive and, you know, like how the Sorns were talking about the Hrasa, right? Or how the Hrasa were talking about the Sorns. And that's in some ways the way that, like, we would look at our pets, you know, that they're so funny when they do this, or they're so cute, or whatever the case may be, you know, that they have like the best worlds together, just being together. And so there's no need for pets because of the unique relationship that they enjoy on this planet together.
Really, the last thing that I wanted to bring up with this postscript was, and I don't, this is just a weird thing, I don't know why it stood out to me, but it just did, was near the end, him talking about the stars and the galaxy. And I think it's just because, you know, even as a kid, or, you know, even now, he's staring up at the night sky, especially when there's no city lights and everything. You can see all the stars and just the beauty. And he's just saying, you know, imagine what it looks like on Earth, but being magnified, seeing mm-hmm. the Milky Way galaxy. Now, Gabe, you said you've been to some pretty rural places. Have you ever been able to see the Milky Way galaxy? Like, you know, just it almost looks like clouds in the sky, but it's actually stars.
Yeah, I don't. I've been to my extended family, not her parents, but her parents' parents and brothers and sisters. They all live in South Dakota. So there's definitely been trips up north to that part of the United States. And you've got big, huge open skies. You're away from everything. It's beautiful at night. But the times we've been there, I don't think have been times where that has been very visible, if that is indeed something that's even visible from that place. So no, I have not really been able to observe that. I've seen images, obviously, the cloudiness, the haziness, the colors, that the streaks in the sky that yeah. kind of make that up.
Yeah, I've been lucky. I've been able to see it a few times, especially doing Crossroads back in the early 2000s and walking through Nevada and New Mexico and Arizona, where there's nothing but desert and there's no mm-hmm. lights. And so you're just staring up and it's just this pinkish, whitish, it's just yeah. gorgeous. And you're just like, wow, that dust looking thing, those are billions and billions of stars that are so close together. And so to imagine being on another planet where you can see this even more vibrant. The only thing that I have not seen yet that I'm dying to see, it's on my bucket list, is the Northern Lights. Mm. And that's something, me wanting to experience that is the only way, the closest thing that I can think of when he's talking about this, the beauty of the galaxies and the stars.
Yeah,
on
yeah,
Malakandra.
Yeah. How about just how he describes Jupiter? That
yeah.
that they're watching like this symphony, this orchestra of stars, you know, appearing, and they're like, wait for it, here it comes. Mm-hmm. And then up above the horizon comes Jupiter, right? And just the vividness that it's there, that there's of course they're so much closer. Mm-hmm. And so
the asteroid belt and
absolutely the yeah. majesty of it. And just yeah. even the way that it's described, like the asteroid belt is like the in between, and then beyond the asteroid belt mm-hmm. lies the different worlds and the different planets. And just, yeah, it was obviously it's alive, mm-hmm. you know, it's not, you know, we don't think of like rocks in space. Right. But it's like this symphony, it's this vibrance, that they just really appreciate and, are able to appreciate, because of the lack of distraction or whatever else, just the way that they live, it feels like they're able to take so much more stock and appreciation in the world about them, not just the world that they live in, but even the world beyond their own.
And it's funny too, because one of the music things that I've listened to and actually got to perform in high school was called Holst is the it's Gustav Holst, and he wrote a symphony where it's based on the planets, mm-hmm. and so each planet has a different theme, if you will. And we played one of the themes, which was Jupiter, and it's mm-hmm. It's the most well recognized, well known one. If you've ever heard it before, they use it for a lot of different compositions. That's the word I'm looking for. And it just, as you're saying, you know, as he was saying, and as you're saying here, just the how the planets is like a symphony, and it's playful, and it's almost music within that. The other thing that was interesting was the gods and the like mythology mm-hmm. that was playing there, and like, and just how kind of universal that can be. You know, here you see it on Earth, you see it there, and just the mythology of all that was pretty interesting.
Yes, and I guess to go from that, one of the things that stood out to me in the postscript here was his reference to the conversation he had with Oyarsa, and in terms of trying to place Oyarsa in our own idea of Christian mm-hmm. angelology.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we were talking about this, like, what is Oyarsa to you? Or what's the Jesus characters, Maladel the Young, there's the Great One, and Oyarsa, is he an archangel, or what is he like? And when Ransom had this conversation with him, he says that Oyarsa seemed to regard our angels somewhat in a different way to himself, and he doesn't know if that's because that's a totally different species, or maybe just a different type of angel, that, you know, they're a different class or different caste of angels. But for whatever reason, like, that just didn't mesh fully, and that makes sense, because even when we were talking about it, there was like no clear perfect connection. And Lewis, by doing this, is like acknowledging, like, yeah, you're gonna see this and you're going to try and make this connection, and it's not really a perfect connection, so don't worry about it, you know? So I was like, this is so creative. This is so brilliant to be able to, like answer some of these questions. I thought it was kind of cute, one of the things here, that he's saying, like, hey, you know, why did you leave this out? Like, one of the things was, like, why didn't you tell people that right before we landed on Malacandra, the shutters jammed? Because obviously, like, when we leave the planet, they're going to be wondering, like, why don't they just close the shutters at that part where it was just super blinding light? And then the line here of, I don't believe your theory that readers never notice that sort of thing. And I'm like, I didn't notice that at all. I didn't even think that.
Nope.
I just thought the light was so bright that was what it was.
You know, and then makes you think, like, okay, am I smart or am I dumb for not? It's a wrong answer either way you answer it.
Questions I didn't even think of.
No matter which way you answer it, you feel terrible.
Exactly. And then for me, there was two last things. One sure. was when he talks about one of his memories is of witnessing the Hras funeral from afar, right? That it's just very unique the way they live. That barring the random incident with a Hanakra, they live a full life, and it's about the same length for each of them, that they can pretty much predict when it's going to be that you're going to pass away, like almost down to the week, for sure the month. And so when it gets to be about that time, they gather together as a community, and those that are going to be passing away are taken on a trip together to go to Oyarsa, to Maladel, where they can spend their last moments with him and before they pass away and are unbodied. And just the acceptance of death, I'm reminded of when Ransom was talking to Augre about the Hrasa and about death, and how he appreciated the Hrasa's view on death, and how Augre said something like, they are right not to fear it. And the line here in the postscript was that the way they see it, that death is not preceded by dread, and of course it's not followed by corruption. Like that for us, like when we pass away, like our bodies corrupt and they turn to ash and to dust. They decompose, they decay, right? There's that the separation of our soul and our bodies. But for these Malachandrans, that when it's time for them to go, they go through this unbodying method when they've passed away and are taken seemingly body and soul, I suppose, to Maladel. Through that process, that there's no corruption. And so I just thought, that's really beautiful, that there's nothing to fear. This is just what it is, and it's what we need to do in order to get to the really amazing next step, and that's to be with Maladel in the heavens.
Mm.
And then the last thing, the very last thing that I had about the postscript was the very, very end. And the little tease, the little cliffhanger that C.S. Lewis gives us here. The way to planets lies through the past. If there's to be any more space traveling, this is the very last few words, it will have to be through time traveling as well.
Yeah.
The end.
Marty, we gotta go back.
Dun 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 dun. That's it, buddy. We're done.
That's it.
What'd you think?
Overall, I would say it was good. I was thinking about this all this week of like, okay, if I was going to give this a letter grade and you know, and what I think, I would probably give it a solid B to a B plus. I don't. On the one hand, I agree, like, I like movement, but I also do like some descriptors, and I feel like, after reflecting on this book, I feel like it's not very long, obviously, it's not a thick book, and mm-hmm. I feel like there could have been a little bit more, especially for character development and character understanding more of the characters, including Ransom, because one of the things, too, I was thinking about, I was like, I understand why they didn't give more description of who he was, because this, for the sake of anonymity, I can't talk, anonymity.
Mm-hmm. I had a cousin named Anonymity once. That's false. I did not.
But, you know, we don't know, you know, usually when an author sets up characters, they'll talk about, you know, how old they are, how tall they are, give us descriptors of who they are, what they look like.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything, and in some ways that's cool because you can make however you want to, and that, you know, that's really fun. But on the other hand, it leaves me lacking, and I wish I knew more of the characters beyond just the, okay, I understand the way Ransom thinks, which is really good, but I just feel like there's some stuff there that could have been.
Well, I think that's due to the unique nature of the style in which this book was written, right? If this is an account from Ransom, then he's not going to spend a lot of time talking about himself and describing himself. While you were talking, I was thinking, you know, you're right. I have a better idea of who Divine and Weston are than I do of Ransom. And I don't mean who they are to their core. Obviously, we've spent this whole time with Ransom. I have a good sense for how he thinks, like what makes him tick, that I don't obviously for other characters, but just in terms of descriptions and age and size and where they come from. And
I mean, you can talk about like how we understand. I can picture a Sorn and a Piffletrig and a Hross much better than I can of Ransom.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and because he knows himself and he's not going to spend time describing himself much. I mean, it makes sense, but he didn't write it.
But that's the thing though. Like, yes, I understand, but he didn't like,
but he's the one that's giving the information.
Right.
Too.
But if he's not the writer, if I was the writer, then I can have the liberty to at least maybe explain myself a little better
unless Lewis wanted it to feel like it was,
which he did obviously because he didn't reveal it until the very end.
That's right. Yeah. So there's that. And then, you know, I did enjoy this book. That I think I enjoyed it more the second time around. Mm. I did enjoy it more the second time around. The first time I thought it was good, but I don't think that I fully appreciated the detail the way that I did the second time around. That I was able to spend more time with this and savor some of the different descriptions. And of course, having read it the first time, I was able to get more out of the descriptions. Like, sure. Oh, I didn't know. Oh, yeah, that makes sense. And it just, for me, it added so much more color. We were talking, it was either last week or the week, about like if this were ever made into a film or something. And I was thinking, I remember thinking that there's not a lot of action in this story. It's a lot of, you know, we're going to travel here and then I'm going to run away. And then I go live amongst the Harasa. And then it's moments and then a lot of like processing and then moments. But then I was thinking of like Dances with Wolves, like it's kind of what it is, right? Like here's this guy that goes to live among the inhabitants of a foreign land. Walks amongst them, starts to learn the language, right? Has to deal with the different challenges along the ways. It's kind of like an interplanetary Dances with Wolves.
Okay.
It's my comparison there. Did you ever see that?
God, it's been a long time.
It's an old movie.
I haven't seen it in a very long time. I was trying to think of another movie that would remind me of it. I my mind, of course, goes to like the Lord of the Rings with the different, you know, the elves and the dwarves, and you have different characters, and just how you have these tree like structures with the Sorns and Piffletrigs and the Haras. And in you're right, there's action and there's a lot of standstill. And this is where I'd be curious to continue to read. I wouldn't say you could create a trilogy, you know, like you said, this wouldn't be an hour and a half movie on its own. Like, I feel like we'd have to read the next two books and kind of take all three and then try to make a three-part series, because, you know, of course now all movies have to be a franchise.
Well,
and
they have to have
a trilogy to make money. But there's definitely a lot here that I think a lot of people would dig. I greatly appreciate the world building in this. That was a huge positive, I think, to be immersed into something. That was a big positive. I would say the flow was also a big positive. Even though, like you said, there's some lulls, it's actually very few. There's not a long time of him just sitting around. They just kind of skip over that, which, you know, that's the whole point of the postscript, right? But it keeps you engaged, which is a huge benefit there. I'm trying to think if are there any other positives that you liked, especially like you said, from the second time reading this?
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I felt like Ransom was very relatable. I felt like that, you know, I really appreciated just the being able to have that look into his mindset and to struggle alongside him, and then to see the evolution of Ransom. I think I really appreciated just that in and of itself, just the transformation from this guy that we have at the beginning, that's kind of a loner and looking only out for himself, to this Ransom we have at the end, who is willing to put others before himself, is willing to be to sacrifice himself, right, so that others can live or survive or be able to benefit in other different ways. Just the evolution of the character, I really appreciated, and I felt like that was a good journey to go along. And then, of course, just the fun ride, you know, just that we're going on a ship, right? And you're in this, for like you said, the world building, the the majesty of the elevation of everything, right? How even the mountains just soared up to the sky, and getting the lay of the land of Mars, and seeing what their perspective was in terms of space and cosmology and philosophy. And yeah, I know, I appreciated all that different stuff. I found that really good.
Well, I don't have anything else really.
No, it was a good book. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I thought it was good. Can't wait to read the next one, to pick it up and to see where the story goes from here.
I think that'll do it, dear listeners. Thank you so much for listening. And tell us what y'all thought of this book, of this first installment of this trilogy of Out of the Silent Planet. And just let us know, what do you expect to happen next? I know I mentioned some predictions a couple of episodes ago, so we'll see what happens. But especially with this wrinkle of time travel, I don't know what's going to happen there. But I would say for this next one, we're just going to jump right in, and we hope that y'all join us for the ride and hop in your spaceships and let's head back to Melacondra.
So the next book is called Paralandra.
Oh, snap. I didn't even look ahead.
At the title of the next book?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the title of the next book, Paralandra. So that would lead me to think that perhaps we're going to Paralandra and not to Melacondra, but hey, I don't know. Let's do this.
I'll say Paralandra is Venus. That's my prediction.
Just shot right out of the dark here.
Just completely, just based nothing on other than that name. Either that, or can I hedge my bets? I'll say Venus or the moon.
And what makes you say that?
Well, I would say first Venus because, well, it's the, well, I would say because it's the name of a planet, and every other, you know, Tholocondra, Melacondra are names of planets.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if C.S. Lewis would make it to where it's like, well, Venus would be uninhabitable like a Mars, where, you know, even back then, especially today, we were like, oh yeah, no, we could possibly make Mars habitable. Mm-hmm. Where Venus, it's impossible. And how we can make the moon colonize that. And so maybe he's looking at the moon as a go-between. I don't know. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah. Well, stay tuned.
Mm-hmm. Well, stay tuned to next week when we start the next book of this trilogy. And you can check us out at readingyourwaytoheaven.fireside.fm. That's also where you can leave your comments. Let us know what you guys think. You know, I would love to hear from y'all. Let me know if you were going to give this book, what letter grade would you give this book? I gave it a B. I'd be willing to bump it up to a B plus. The more I think about it, I'll probably bump it up to a B plus. What would you give it, Gabe?
Yeah, I think B plus is pretty solid. I'm hesitant to go up to an A. But I did enjoy it. I thought it was pretty solid, more than just average. So yeah.
Well, it seems like
I feel safe with B plus.
That's a little surprising because I would have thought you would have said A minus, especially the way you were describing after your second read.
No, I think the first time I read it so quickly that I thought it was good, but I just didn't fully appreciate it. So I thought it was, you know, it was a book. It was good. Mm. It was whatever. Maybe a B minus even.
Okay.
And so just the appreciation of all the stuff I mentioned. Yeah, no, it has definitely bumped it up for me to a B plus. That being said, I didn't feel there have been other books that I've read where I felt more of a connection to the characters or more of an investment into the storyline than I did with this particular one. And so I did enjoy it. I thought it was good. definitely worthwhile. There was a lot to get out of it, but yeah, I'm going to leave some room there for another book to come around and beat it.
All right. Well, thank you all so much again, and we'll catch you in the next one. Love you back.
Love you. Bye.